You are about to enjoy a presentation recorded at the 2023 Michigan Conference Camp Meeting held at Cedar Lake, Michigan. We pray that the Lord will bless you as you listen.
Dear God, thank you for all that you've done for us, for the blessings that you've bestowed, for our life, for our health, and for the wealth that you've given to us. We recognize that all we have has come from you. This morning, we claim the promise that where two or three are gathered in your name, there you will be also. You see the room here, and there are certainly more than two or three. And so we pray for your presence to be here, that all that I say would come from you, that we would learn directly from your wisdom and not from man's wisdom. We ask that blessing here today in Jesus' holy name. Amen. All right, as we get started, just kind of a quick reminder. This has become my favorite text this week, our perspective on money. This is David again talking in a prayer to God at the end of his life. As you remember, he had wanted, his desire was that he would be able to build a permanent structure for God's sanctuary. He made the comment, why should we be living in these wonderful places when God is living in a tent? And so his desire was to build a permanent sanctuary for God. And God, of course, had told him that while he could gather the materials, he could not actually do the building, that would be left to his son Solomon. And at the end of David's life, when he looked at all that had been gathered, and it reminded me too, remember the children of Israel in the wilderness, where they built the original tent sanctuary, that there was a call for what they needed, and there was so much that Moses finally had to say, stop, do not bring any more, we already have too much. And something very similar happens here with David, where he looks over this vast, and I'm going to just say acres and acres and acres and acres. The Bible says that just the bronze alone that was made when they put together the temple sanctuary could not be measured. And so David looks at everything that they've accumulated in order to prepare for the building of the sanctuary in the temple. And this is in his prayer. He says, but who am I and who are my people that we should be able to offer as generously as this? For all things come from you, and from your hand we have given to you. So when we're reviewing our finances, the things that will make our life hopefully better here on earth, and we're going to talk about this specifically tomorrow, better for eternity, that we recognize that everything we have comes from God. And if it's God's to begin with, then God has a plan. And it is, I believe, a requirement of ours that we follow God's plan. So with that in mind, by the way, if you were interested, that was 1 Chronicles 29:14.
Thank you.
Yes. I also want to talk a couple minutes this morning. The question came up, you know, we've been talking about having a budget. We've been talking about paying off debt. We talked about savings, having an emergency fund, saving for kids' education. The mortgage has come up. We're going to talk more about investing today. And the question came up, and this is a very legitimate question. What's the order for all this? How should we go about this? Where should we start? What should we be doing first? And so I took some time yesterday. I went back. Most people here are familiar with Dave Ramsey. In fact, I think they teach a class here at the Academy for some of the students, a Dave Ramsey course. And because of that, I went back to what he has to say. I thought there's credibility there. Let's see what his steps are. And so he has 7 steps for getting to financial freedom. He calls them the baby steps. And I'm going to have 8 because I think there's one that maybe he implies, but he actually doesn't say. And I think it should be 1. And so 1, if we want to achieve financial freedom, step 1 is pay a faithful tithe and a free will offering. God cannot fully bless us until we show through our actions that we realize that everything we have comes from Him, and all these other things fall into place. But if we neglect this one item, we will never be on a sound financial basis. So 1, pay a faithful tithe and a free will offering. 2, the second item, once we've done that, we now want to start our $1,000 initial emergency fund. And I've said before, people say $1,000 isn't enough. And you're right, it isn't. We need more than $1,000, but we need to start somewhere. And so 2 is have $1,000 for a starter or an initial emergency fund. Once you have that, 3 then is pay off all your debt other than your home mortgage using the debt snowball process. So once you've got that $1,000 for an emergency fund, if something terrible happens, you at least have some funds that you can go to. You don't have to end up further in debt. The third process is to start paying off debt. And if you remember the snowball process that we talked about on Tuesday, you find your smallest debt, whatever it is, and you find all the money that you can, and you pay off that debt as fast as possible. And when you're done paying off that smallest debt, you now take that payment and whatever extra that you were using, and you add that to the payment for your next smallest debt. And you pay that down as quickly as possible. And when you're done with that, then you take that first debt payment, that second debt payment, plus the extra that you had, and you apply that to the third debt. And you continue to do that until your debt is paid off. So that would be the third step. Dave Ramsey would call it the second step. I'm calling it the third. The third or fourth here, depending on how you're keeping track, is to now go beyond your $1,000 starter emergency fund for emergencies and now have somewhere between 3 and 6 months of expenses. Remember, we talked about we don't need 3 or 6 months of income. We only need 3 to 6 months of expenses, because if we have to dip into our expenses, we're not paying tithe and offering on the principal, on the earnings that we might be getting in a savings account, sure. But we don't have to repay the tithe and offering on the principal that we're using, nor are we paying taxes, right? We've already paid taxes. It's already our money. So we need to take a look at a 3 to 6 months of expenses in order to fully fund an emergency fund. Once you have that, his recommendation then is to invest 15% of your household income into retirement savings. Now, here's where I may differ a little bit, and I'm not saying that I'm right, certainly not saying that he's wrong. I've said before that if you have a retirement plan and they're going to match, let's say dollar for dollar up to the first 5%, I would be inclined to start that even sooner in the process, to start using the ability to tie into that free money. And so maybe starting the process, not fully, but at least getting that match contribution in a 401k plan. But once you've taken care of these other things, his recommendation is get up to about 15%. Then after that, save for your children's college fund. Then pay off your home early. You can see that for most of us, paying off the home as much as we would like to in the recommendation, typically that's one of the last things. Usually that's because the interest rates are fairly low, and that's a good thing. And then the very last item, build wealth and give. And tomorrow we're going to talk specifically about the giving and the legacy, what to do after we've followed God's plan. And as we approach the end of life, how does God want us then to use those assets that he's entrusted to us? So any questions on this? Yes.
Question. Now, before I reach, like I follow all the steps, does it mean from the first one I don't give? Because like build wealth and give.
The question was, does this mean that we go through the first 6 or 7 without doing any giving? I would say no. What I think what he's talking about here is giving where you're distributing out all of your assets. We can give today, and that's why I start with number one, we don't wait until we're done to start paying God a tithe. We start today, before we do anything else, returning to God a faithful tithe and an offering.
Okay, as I talk about that, I mean, tithe is that don't touch thing, that one I know.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Not among the giving. Actually, I don't count it among the giving. I count it among the
okay,
return.
Excellent. Yes.
That's just the return, not the giving. But now, there are other things that maybe are in the community or anything that someone needs to give. And that's why, like, I don't know the right word to do. Like,
is it prudent?
After I give tithe and offering, does it mean I can't give before I save and do all these other things?
Yeah, really good question. Thanks for the clarification. The clarification, and as you guys know, I'm repeating this, so the benefit of the listeners that are not here today but want to listen in later on. The question is, if I'm wanting to help out my community and I haven't gotten through all these steps, am I prohibited or encouraged not to do anything to give back before I've completed all this? My answer is no. I want us to keep in mind, how many of you here have ever traveled on an airplane? think most of us have, and they always go through the safety instructions at the beginning. In an emergency situation, oxygen mask will drop. They'll talk about the bag may not look like it's filling, but oxygen will be flowing. And they always tell you, put the mask on first yourself, and then your children or the people around you. And the reason is that we can't help others unless we've at least taken a step ourselves. And so I think that principle applies here, not that we can't give until we've done all these other things, but we don't want to end up giving and finding ourselves in a situation where we can't now do anything because we haven't followed these. So the giving to help others, God will bless that. And so I would certainly encourage that we want to be part of that. But just be careful that we don't find ourselves getting deeper and deeper into debt, problems like that, because we're giving away everything to everyone else. Does that make sense? So I would tell you there's a balance to it. I'm not sure I can tell everyone exactly is going to be the same, and I would pray that the Holy Spirit can guide us individually on that. But I would not tell you that you can't give until you've done everything. The extent is going to depend on the individual.
It's okay. Maybe it's because of my background and because of the examples that I have of people who have been giving and left with nothing. And I have seen like God provide in a very miraculous way. And that's why I'm actually struggling with saving first when someone is going hungry. Maybe my neighbor, maybe, you know, I can't stand that I have $10 in a bank and someone is sleeping hungry. Because what comes first, the $10 in a bank or life? You see?
Sure. No, I understand exactly. And that's where I'm telling us as a group here, I'm not going to make that determination. And again, for those of you listening, the question is, or the comment was, I can't sleep knowing that I have $10 in the bank and someone else is without food or a certain situation. Very well stated. My point here is I'm not going to tell everyone that we have to do something along that lines that God may or may not have called everyone to do. This is an outline for finances and for how to achieve and get to a place where we have total freedom. God is always the one that blesses. In the end, this is His money. And what He calls us to do is His decision. We have to be willing to listen. These are, again, there's flexibility in all this, but someone had just said, if we're going through the process, where do we start? And so this is an answer to a question yesterday, and I think it's a legitimate question. If we're trying to go through this, how do we approach it? But the goal is not personal wealth. And a lot of times we think that we're here in the class because how do I love God, I want to serve Him, but how do I get rich? What's the way to do that? That is not actually the purpose of this class. In fact, if you don't mind, there's two things I'm going to talk about, and I might have to skip ahead here. Actually, let me try to do this. If you guys give me a second, I'm going to go to a slide here that talks a little bit more about our outlook rather than just the principles for how do we do things properly. We're talking about these are concepts that work for a lifetime. Hopefully, we're starting young and we're going through the process. But my question is this: would we make a different financial decision in terms of what we do with what God's entrusted us? If we had 50 years left of time, would we make a certain type of decision versus if we only had 5 years left of time? And this is what I really wanted us to focus on. Again, what I was going through with that other slide had to do with an answer to a very good question. If we're trying to get started, where do we get started in all the stuff that we've been talking and teaching this week? But I'm also convinced that I am fully convinced that we are much closer to the 5 years than the 50 years. Is that fair?
Amen.
And some people would say we might be closer to the 5 months than the 5 years. I can't tell you exactly when God's going to come again, but the signs are really clear. God is coming again soon. And so when we take a look at all these things, these sound strategies for doing the right financial decisions so that we have the opportunity to give as much as possible, number one, we recognize it comes from God. Number two, we trust in Him, not in money. The minute we start trusting in money, we have a problem. And so I want to encourage us not to get there. But we also need to take all this information and recognize if my goal is to start out in life and to go through this process and buy a home and then have a good retirement and then finally dispose of my income as God will direct us, and we'll talk about that tomorrow. I don't know that there's 50 years to do that. And I may make very different decisions today because I believe that time is very short. And I believe that it's time for us to get our financial business in order to be prepared for when God comes again. And so I want to particularly talk here about the idea. I read an article yesterday. This is from Crown Financial Ministries. I really, really like Crown. I like it. I appreciate Dave Ramsey and all that he has to say. But I think that Crown is actually, in my opinion, and this is just my opinion, more biblically, spiritually sound. And he talks about, Chuck talks about there, why getting out of debt may be overrated. Now, just hear me out. Okay? Instead, he says we need to focus on get out of claiming ownership. You understand what he's saying here? It's not just how do I get out of debt. We need to start with the idea, how do I get out of thinking that everything I have is mine? Because it came from God and it ultimately belongs to Him. Number two, we need to get out of temporal financial planning. We need to move beyond this idea of finances as something secular that I'm going to enjoy here on earth. Just to your point, that finances are more about something very lasting and spiritual. And the third, how do we get out of greed, coveting, and selfishness? Now, I'm not telling you that we need to focus on these three, those three items there, excluding getting out of debt. I'm not saying they're either or. In fact, one of my favorite texts is something that Jesus said, and I'm going to pull it up here. He talked to the Pharisees, and he said, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faith. These you ought to have done without neglecting or leaving the others undone." So that's what God often talks about. He'll come to people and say, look, there's more that you needed to do. You think that you're doing everything here. And what he's saying is you needed to have done this without neglecting that. And so that's the principle that I want us to apply here, is when we're talking about getting out of debt, don't avoid getting out of debt, but never neglect the real issues, which is we need to quit claiming ownership of all that we have. We need to stop planning for our own benefit. And finally, we need to get rid of greed, coveting, and selfishness. What we want is sound financial principles that are based on the fact that we serve God. We don't serve money. Fair enough?
Yes.
Okay. So what we're going to talk about today then, as we move forward here, today's title is Investing Isn't Gambling and Gambling Isn't Investing. How many of you heard someone say before, I don't invest, that's gambling. That's just gambling. I'm not going to invest anything. Some of us have probably heard that before. So let's talk about what the difference is. And I want to start with what is investing versus saving. Yesterday we talked about how to save money. And specifically we talked about savings means putting away money for later use in a safe place, such as a bank account. So when we're talking about having an emergency fund, having something that we can rely on, this is money that you don't put at risk. This is simply money that's safe and secure that you can draw on whenever it's needed. And so we typically will use some type of bank account, or I like to call it a stable value fund, something that doesn't fluctuate a lot. Investing, on the other hand, means taking some risk and buying assets that will ideally increase in value and provide you with more money than you put in over the long term. So you see the difference there? One of them is meant in some ways as a holding place to be able to use on a short term, but the other one is how do we grow those assets over time for the benefit that God is calling us to use them. Now, here's where I want to take a couple minutes and talk about investing versus gambling. All right? Every decision that we make has two components. Everything that we do has a cost and it has a benefit or a reward. Fair enough? I'll use the example for those of you who were here when we were just chatting before the class began, we were talking about how delicious Sam's pull-apart chicken deep fried is. All right, and so I made the comment that one of my weaknesses is molten lava chocolate cake. All right, I'm just gonna own it. So if I go and decide that I'm gonna buy, actually I'll get to that in a second. Sure, go back one slide. Someone's asked if we could go back a slide. All right, got that? All right, I'm gonna leave it there for a minute while we're talking about cost and the benefit. Right, investing here. I and V, that means investing. GMB means gambling. When I make a decision and I put the, actually I got ahead of myself again. If I make a decision and I want the benefit today, and that would be, let's be honest, that's the molten lava chocolate cake, am I right? I want the benefit, this is today, and this is the future. I want the benefit today, the benefit or the reward today, so I eat the molten lava chocolate cake. Fair? I'm hoping that by getting the benefit or the reward that maybe I can avoid a cost later on. Because what's the cost of having eaten that? Okay, we could turn this into a health class, couldn't we? Okay. Most of us would admit that as good as the molten lava chocolate cake may taste initially, there's probably a price to pay in the future. Am I right? So you got the benefit today and you have the cost in the future. Now, to be fair to myself, this week I've also gotten up each morning before the early morning meeting and I do a power walk for an hour, okay? About 4.5 miles or so. That would be the cost, right? So I did the cost first. Do we believe that in the future there will be a reward or a benefit for that? Yes, absolutely. So we'll call the benefit the reward. There's two things I want to talk about when it comes to investing versus gambling, but I want to start with this one. This is an investment. If I pay the cost up front, desiring a positive outcome in the future, in my mind, that's an investment. I invested in my health this morning by doing that. But when I eat the molten lava chocolate cake at 11 o'clock at night, I get the benefit, but there's a cost later on. That's a gamble. I'm gambling my health, hoping that whatever benefit I have may not cost me too much in the end. So this is my way of looking at it, and there's another way we're gonna share as well, that a cost today with a future benefit is usually how an investment works. In fact, I would tell you this is a very biblical principle. Doesn't the Bible say, consider the cost of becoming my disciple today? But Jesus also says, behold, I am coming, and I will be bringing my reward with me. So there is a biblical precedence that we pay the cost today, and we reap the reward in the future. And the reward is far greater than the cost. Fair enough? But many times when we're gambling, the cost ends up being far more than the benefit. And so that's one of the ways that we'll look at what are we doing that's either gambling or it's an investment. The other thing I would have us look at, are the odds in your favor or are the odds against you? A lot of times people think about gambling and one of the first things we think about is a casino, all right? And by the way, I have never been to a casino officially, but I've been into several conferences that are at a casino. And if you've never been to one, I will tell you, you've seen billboards of people, you know, come to this particular casino. It is not like the billboards, I assure you. And anyone else that's been there will tell you. Unfortunately, most of the people that go there are the people that can least afford it. It's very, very sad. Gambling at a casino, there's a certain amount of money that comes in. And that's the people that are gambling, they're putting money in. That money is used to pay for the facility, it's used to pay for the utilities, it's used to pay for all the employees, and it also goes into profits for the people that own it. And the profits are huge. And what's left after all the expenses and after all the profits and all the salaries and everything is what gets paid out. Now let me ask you something. If you go in and on average for every dollar that goes in, I'm just gonna throw out a number, for every dollar that goes in, 20 or 30 cents gets paid out. Are the odds in your favor?
No.
Absolutely not. Gambling is where the odds are not in your favor. On the other hand, if you had something where 80 or 90% of the time it was profitable or beneficial, are the odds now in your favor?
Yes.
And so when we talk about investing, number one, investing is where the odds are in our favor. It doesn't mean that every single time it will work perfectly, but it does mean that on average, there is a benefit to it. And we'll talk a little bit about how to invest. So we looked at that odds in your favor versus odds against you. Do you pay the cost first with the rewards benefits later? Or are you attempting to get the rewards now and pushing the cost later? And I would tell you guys, I know this is a finance seminar, but this is, I think, an incredible philosophy on life. Are we doing the things today? Are we willing to pay the cost and get a benefit later, rather than always saying I need immediate gratification for my decisions and I'm hoping that I don't have to pay for it somewhere down the road? Or more importantly, and because this is often what happens, when we take the benefit now, we take it because we can't afford the cost, and when the cost comes due later, we still can't pay it. And other, sometimes it costs us both times, and many times we end up where people around us pay the cost for our bad choices. So, with that in mind, I want to talk a little bit about some principles of investing, and let's take a look at stocks versus bonds. How many of you guys have heard of stocks and bonds? All right. I want to talk just for a minute, and we're going to kind of try to take this to, I wouldn't call it the lowest level. For those of you that are very familiar, this is not going to be new, but what is a stock and what is a bond? Because this becomes the basis of most investing. So let's take a look at the characteristics of each. I'm going to start with stocks. With a stock, it's an investment where you own something. All right? I often liken it to if you own a house, you are owner of a piece of property. If that home appreciates in value, who gets to keep the value? You do, because it's you own it. If it happens to drop in value, who gets the loss? You do. We do, because you own that piece of property. A stock is really the same thing, but instead of owning a piece of property or a home, you're owning part of a company. And that company can be profitable and can go up in value, and you appreciate, your value appreciates. Sometimes stocks can drop in value, and you may experience a loss of value in your account. But it's based on an ownership. And the way that you make money is through a price appreciation. Most people recognize I buy a home, and I hope in a few years it's going to be worth more than what I paid for it. That's called appreciation. Stocks are the same thing. They grow through price appreciation, and some of them also pay out a dividend. It's kind of like returning some profits to you as the owner. There is no specific time period for a stock. Just like when you bought your house, you didn't say, I'm buying it, and in 10 years, I'm going to be done buying it. You can sell it at any time, but there's no definite finite period of ownership, no maturity date. And generally speaking, stocks have higher volatility and risk along with higher potential returns. Does that make sense to everyone? We good? Any questions on that? All right. Bonds, on the other hand, instead of owning something, you are loaning something. A company, in order to be profitable and to be in business, often needs to borrow money, but rather than go to a bank, they come to us as investors. And so bonds are a type of a loan where we are the lender to the corporation. And so you make money through receiving interest payments. You know, when we borrow money, we're paying back principal, we're paying back the interest. So the bank is making money on those interest payments. In the same way, if we buy a bond, every year we are receiving interest payments from that corporation. And that's how we receive, that's how we make money in a bond. Almost always there's a definite time period. You can buy 3 month, 6 month, 1 year, 2 year, 5 year, 10 year, 30 year bonds. So depending on what you want, you can find a time period. But almost all bonds start the day that you buy it, and they have a very specific, what they call maturity date. How many of you here are familiar with CDs? All right, most people know what a CD is. A bond is conceptually very, very similar to a CD. You know, you go into the bank, you give them your money. It's a 5-year CD. Every year or month, you're getting your interest, and in 5 years, you get all your money back. A bond is the same thing, except that it's not FDIC insured, and it's not issued by a bank. It's issued by any number of corporations around the country and around the world. But because it's interest payments rather than price appreciation, there tends to be much lower volatility and risk, again, along with lower potential returns. So these two investments form the foundation of most investing that we're familiar with. Now, I'm not going to take the time today to go into real estate. Real estate can be a very good investment. For some people, that may not be as reasonable. There can be some hurdles getting into real estate. And so I'm going to focus on the things that I think all of us would be involved in, especially since most of us have 401ks or IRAs or something like that. So I'm going to focus on that. But here's the principles that I want us to talk about when it comes to investing. Number one, the reason that we invest is something called compounding. All right? Most of us will not make returns like this over 20 years in a savings account that's paying us 0.05%. So if you take a look, this says an initial investment of $10,000 in the S&P 500, which, by the way, is just a broad measure of the United States stock market. An initial investment of $10,000 over the last 20 years, that $10,000 grew. You can see that it reached its high in 2021. It dropped in 2022 with the market drop last year. But we're approaching somewhere around $185,000. $10,000 over 20 years grew to about $185,000, which is significant. And the reason I mention this, for those of us that are saving for retirement, most of us cannot save on just with our own money enough to fund our retirement. But when we harness the power of investing with this compounding growth over time, what we find is that when we retire, 2/3, maybe 3/4 of what's in there is the growth. It's not just what we put in. And this can be very, very powerful. Now, in doing this, here's what I want to talk about. How many of you like the idea of going from $10,000 to $185,000 over 20 years? Okay. How many of us like what happened between 2021 and 2022, the last two bars? Any takers? Okay. It's painful when money goes down, right? Very painful. And if I may, I'm going to erase. Here we go. Erase this a moment. And I'm going to talk about how we as investors tend to look at investments when it comes to the risk, because that's one of the next things we need to look at. So we have a graph, and down here, how do I do this? I often will draw this when I'm meeting with people, but I write it upside down, so I'm trying to remember how I do it right side up. This is return. Okay, so this is zero right here. This is a really high return. This is zero risk. This is high risk over here. Now, if you were to put a dot or an X somewhere on this graph, where would you want to be?
Where your left hand is.
You'd want to be right here, right? I want no risk, and I want 25% a year, guaranteed. And I can get my money whenever I want, right? I'm not saying it's out there, but if we're honest, isn't that what we would want? Sure. The reality is that we find there is no unicorn here. Generally speaking, investments plot somewhere, you know, kind of like this, where on average, the more risk you take, the higher the return you should get, or the more return you want, the higher the risk you have to take. And by the way, return is simply a payment for the amount of risk, or I like to say volatility, that we're willing to take. When we look specifically at investments, and we talked about two kinds, stocks and bonds, what we find, and this is all leading up to the next point I want to make, bonds may be somewhere here. Fairly low risk, somewhat low return compared to other investments. Neither good nor bad. It just is what it is. Stocks, maybe here. Much higher risk, but the return potential is much higher. And by the way, I said 25 here. That doesn't mean that I think we're going to get 2025. We can talk about the actual returns later. Most people recognize, though, I don't necessarily want to do just one or the other. Can I blend them? Can I have part in some? Can I diversify? And the answer is absolutely. We're going to talk about that next. And so the idea is we envision that if I go partway, halfway between stocks and bonds, maybe 50-50, I'll have half of the risk is divided in half between the two, and the returns are somewhere between the two, right? Does that make sense? The reality, though, is when you have non-correlated assets, and I know that's a deep term, that means when one is up, the other could be down, vice versa. They sometimes move opposite of each other, and stocks and bonds are somewhat, have a lower correlation. And if they're diversified properly, the line between those two is not a straight line. It actually grows something like this. All right? And so I tell people all the time, from an investment perspective, why would you want to be here? When if you diversify properly, you can either take the same risk and you can increase your return, or if that's the return that you want, let's get rid of all that risk. That's what proper diversification will do. Now, when we're looking at this, again, this is general concepts. Any clients, investors, whatever, there's no wrong place to be on this line. Everyone's situation is unique. Some people have a much higher tolerance for risk than others. Some people have very low tolerance. There's no right or wrong place. But what I tell people is that you don't want to be here or here or here. You want to maximize the efficiency of a portfolio. The goal of investing is to get as much return for the least amount of risk. And I go back to what we talked about yesterday, the idea that one of the things, if we believe that God has entrusted us, is a requirement of being entrusted by God or by anyone else. We talked about within the context of being a steward, a trustee, whatever it is. There is a duty to be productive. God requires us, if he's entrusted something with us, that we are productive with it. And if we have funds that he's given to us that he has not called for us to use, and he calls all of us differently, but the funds that we have, he expects us to be productive, and this is one of the ways that we can do that. We can grow that, not for our personal benefit, but so that we can do more and more of what God is calling us to do. And so as we talk about this idea of diversification, we'll take it a step farther. The value of diversification, if we look up at the screen here, you guys probably can't read the different asset classes, and that's okay. But I would just ask you, when you look at that, is there one color that's always the best? No. Is there one color that's always the worst? No, there's not. Different kinds of assets, whether it be long-term bonds, short-term bonds, U.S. stocks, large company, small company, international, commodities, whatever. What you'll find over time is that in any given year, one may do well, and another year it may do poorly compared to the others. And that's one of the reasons why we diversify. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Do not buy just one investment. Or at least have just one underlying investment within that. So there's value in diversification, because if done properly, not only are you avoiding being in the worst one for the year, but you can actually increase your returns while minimizing your risk. All right? Let me stop there for a second. Any questions? Either you guys are like super smart, or you're like, I don't want to admit, but go ahead.
I don't really know much about it, but like I said, so where did you invest? Where did you go to invest?
Yeah, great, great question. Where do you go? Number one, the most common place I would tell people is, the question is, where do you go to invest? For those of you listening, if you are working for a company that has a retirement plan, that is, for retirement purposes, the best place to start. You can simply sign up, and they will have usually, I'm going to say, a dozen or so different investment options that you can choose from. They'll have usually some information that can help you make the right choice, that can kind of work through all these different classes and categories and how to put it together. But for the purposes of saving for retirement, start with your company.
So what if you're self-employed?
If you're self-employed, I was just getting there. If you're self-employed, then the next thing to do is you open up, if it's for retirement, you open up an IRA or a simple IRA 401k. That allows you to put more in. And you can do that through a couple of things. You can go to your bank, and your bank often will have someone that can assist with that. You can talk to an investment advisor. Any one of these people can easily set them up. You can go direct to a mutual fund company, Fidelity, Vanguard. You open up an account directly with them. You can go to a brokerage, online brokerage, TD Ameritrade, Schwab, and from there you can buy and invest. But for most people, doing it all on your own can be a little intimidating. And so I often suggest to find a good advisor to work with if you're doing it outside of your company. And I'm going to be very careful when I say this, because my goal here today is in no way to do anything about me. This is about just sharing information that can help you guys. But that's what we do at our firm. So I can tell you that's a good place to go. If you do work with an advisor, though, that's what's called a fiduciary. There's two different groups of advisors. Most of them look and smell the same, very same when you're interacting. One of them has a standard where the standard is it just has to be suitable to you. The other one, the standard is it has to be in your best interest. You want the one that's in your best interest. So I would recommend if other than stopping in a bank, work with an investment advisor, someone. Question, I think I saw you, Jeremy, and then I'm gonna come to you, David.
In your area, because I live, John, where you live, Greg,
yeah.
Is there any fiduciaries that you would recommend? Because I've done a lot of told me not to do just now.
Sure. I can find some. Let's talk afterwards. I know a number that are that would do the suitability. The your typical broker. We're really splitting hairs here. Organizations are operating under the monitoring of one of two different firms in the United States. FINRA is what a standard broker would do, and that's a suitability requirement. And the other is the SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, and that's a fiduciary, which is it has to be best interest. We're a firm that is a SEC firm, and so we do best interest. There's not a lot in Grand Haven. Most of them are on the broker side, but up in Muskegon. Let's talk, and I'll see if I can find one. So, David, you had a question.
When we go to one of these places that you recommended, is there anything that we need to be careful with? Is there anything small print that any things that we should look out for?
Yeah, great, great question. I would tell you, number one, you want to know how they're paid. The question is there something that we should be watching out for, small print that we should be looking at? Here's what I tell people. If you want to know who they're really working for,
themselves,
look at who's paying them. If they are telling you, you don't have to pay for it, this product pays for it, then they're working for the product. They're not truly working for you. What you really want is an advisor who has no commissions, no sales charges on their investments. And I'm a big believer, most of the time, annuities fall into a category that you don't want. They look really good, but they end up being much less than what they promised to be. But that's what you want to look for. How are you compensated? And if there's some compensation, whatever it is, and I decide that I want to move because this isn't working out, is there any penalty? You should not have any penalty to leave. Mm-hmm. Two biggest things. Mark, and then I'm going to come back to you, Jim.
Yeah, you talked about emergency fund and savings.
Yes.
Would a CD be a good spot to put those?
Yeah, the question is, would a CD be a good place for an emergency fund or your savings? Absolutely. It would be a good place, but if your emergency fund, I wouldn't have it be very long term, because you don't want a lot of penalties if you have to get that money. The emergency fund means you could use it any time. So if you need to pull that money out, have it be a fairly short term, but there's nothing wrong with having it in a safe place that's earning interest. I would have it probably a 3-month. And that's just me, but yeah, you definitely want it on the shorter end. Don't do it a year or two or 5 years, absolutely. Keep it short term. What's that? The question is, would I do stocks for an emergency fund? I would not. Because the time that you need it could be exactly when the markets are at their low point.
Yeah.
So I would, your emergency fund really needs to be something that's stable, that you have full value whenever you need to get to it. There was another question that I saw somewhere here, Jim, and then did I see, did you have one too? Okay, I'm gonna get Jim and then I'm gonna come over here to Pastor Bob.
I just wonder what's the other way that they get paid if they aren't getting paid out of commission?
Yeah, the question is, how does an advisor get paid if they're not paid through the product or the commission? They charge an explicit cost, and that fee comes from the account. So let's say you have $100,000 in there.
So that would
the advisor pay, the, no, the, over time, they charge 1% a year, let's say. And so each year you see those funds, but you actually see it. It's not invisible, it's not hidden. I will tell you that the costs are there whether you see it or not. And usually if you don't see it, it's even more. And that's why they hide them. And so it's kind of built into the product. Your returns are lower. They've already taken it, as opposed to you see the full returns and then you see the compensation. But that needs to be very, very transparent, in my opinion. Go ahead.
So your opinion on two things. One is Kingdom Advisors, and two would be clean stocks.
Yes, and actually we'll talk about that in just a minute. The question was working with people that are focused on advising with the Kingdom perspective, and then also talking about investments that are in connection with God's principles. And that, you know, should we be doing that? I believe so, and I wanna talk, that's the last thing I'm gonna mention here. There's a couple other slides I wanna cover. We've got about 10 or 11 minutes. When we're looking at diversification, it's very helpful, because here's something we need to keep in mind. Volatility is normal. A lot of people recognize, oh yeah, markets can go up and down, no problem. Then they get in and the market goes down and they panic. It's very normal to have markets go up and markets come down, especially in the stock market. So you see, if you're looking at it from a short term, just 1 year, that is a very dramatic range. Anywhere from, what number do we have here? I'm gonna look, 39% down versus 47% up. That's a big range. But look what happens when you look at this over 20 years. If you look at average 20-year periods, instead of being down 39 to up 47, the average is somewhere between up 6 and up 17%. So don't get worried if for some reason you have investments and they tend to drop in value at some point. They do. It happens. Last year, and we talked about this earlier this week, last year was not a good year in the stock market. It was down 20%. That's not the first time it's ever happened. No big deal. I mean, yes, it's very painful, but it's not where people said, I've never seen this before. The bond
it'll
come back.
Bail out on the low point.
That's right. The comment is, don't bail out when it's low. The way you make money in investing is you buy low and you sell high. Most people get into trouble because they waited until the market was high and they said, I got to be part of that. And they bought in high. And then when it drops, they say, I can't stand this, and they sell. And so they're buying high and selling low. Really, that's what happens. In fact, I'm going to throw out just another number real quick. The average investment makes about 7.5% over time, somewhere between, we'll call it 6.5%, 7.5%. The average investor, not the investment, the average investor, somewhere a little bit less than 3%. How is it that if on average investments are making 7, how is it that people are only on average making 3? It's because they're getting in and then getting out at the exact wrong time. Mm-hmm. And in fact, that leads me to the next slide, the impact of being out of the market. If you're in the market continuously, you don't jump in and jump out, 9.8% fully invested. This is just the stock market. But if you missed just the 10 best days over that time period, over a period of 20 years, if you missed just every other year, you missed one day because you had pulled out, your return goes from 9.8 down to 5.6. Let's go a little farther. Let's say that you missed the 40 best days. So that's 2 days a year. Instead of a positive 9.8, you're down 1.1%. Okay, that's why I tell people all the time, and everyone thinks they can do it, don't market time. Don't try to figure out, oh, this is the best time, I'm gonna get in right now, and then market says, oh, I gotta get out. I can't tell you how many times we've had clients that are convinced that they're right, they move out, and the market does exactly what they think it's not gonna do. And in order to get market timing right, you have to be right twice. You have to know exactly when either to get in and exactly when to get out, or you have to know exactly when to get out and exactly when to get back in. So there's two decisions you have to get perfect. Most people don't even get the first one right. And that's mathematically calculated. Most people don't get it right the first time. So now you have to... What's that?
Then you're a day trader.
Then you're a day trader. Yeah, the comment is, then you're a day trader. And I'm not saying that people haven't made money, but on average, here's where the odds are against you. We go back to what we were talking about at the beginning, investing versus gambling. If the odds are against you, it's a gamble. If the odds are in your favor, it's an investment. Yes?
How do we really don't have a clue?
Yeah.
So how should we know how to navigate that?
Yeah, what I tell people, the question is, how do we navigate if we're not sure what to do? Here's where you start. You work with someone that can help you build a plan. It takes into account, what is the goal of the money? What is the time period for the money? And what is your tolerance for risk? And you take those three things and a portfolio is built. Now, from time to time, a good advisor may make some small adjustments. But in general, that's something that should last for quite a period of time. And so when the markets drop, you plug your nose and you close your eyes and you say, I'm not going to worry about it, because these things happen. And you are paid a higher return over time for not panicking when markets go down. And so the best thing we can do in a scenario like this is, when the markets move against us and it's uncomfortable, that we don't change just because they went down. We have to stay the course. That's the best advice I think I can give. You got a question, and then we'll go in the back here.
So you know, people are talking about where to park their money. You know, if it's going to be like 3 months or 6 months, or it's only for emergency, Laking Revolving Fund actually pays pretty decent returns. And it helps to advance the kingdom, because that money goes to help build churches and other things. So that's a great place to put it. And for us, at our, we took the reserves of our church and we put it in there. It was 10 times more than what the bank was paying at 0.1% interest.
Okay. Yeah, great, great point. The point is that for those short-term dollars, one of the options in addition to your bank is the Lake Union Revolving Fund. And that's something where it benefits our churches. Because the churches from time to time need to be able to borrow money. They can borrow from those funds. It pays a good interest rate. I think there may be some stipulations in terms of how much you can put there. And Mike, we may have talked a little bit about that. Anyway, reach out to the Lake Union. They can probably tell you that. It may not work all the time for everyone because of some constraints in terms of how much or whatever. But the concept is exactly there. Not only are you able to have the money in a secure, safe place, but you're also advancing God's kingdom through helping the churches. So good, good point. So this is the point that I want to make, is don't jump around. Have a good strategy that is well thought out in the beginning, and then stick with that over time. And in the last couple minutes here, I want to just share real quick, because you brought this up, faith-based investing, which is really biblical values investing. For the last, I would call it probably the last 30 years, there's been something in our industry called ESG, which is environmentally social conscious type of investing. How can we invest in a way that's environmentally friendly, that supports the earth, that's socially conscious, et cetera? That has exploded in proliferation. The concept, in many ways, I would agree with. God has entrusted us with the earth. We should take good care of the earth as a steward for him. But unfortunately, what you find is many times the social agenda is not in keeping with biblical values. All right. There are organizations now that have recognized that, yes, I don't want to be buying or investing in a company that sells firearms. I don't want to be buying or investing in a company that sells tobacco. I don't want to buy into a company that supports abortion. So there's a number of very specific things that, as Christians, we would say, I don't want to be promoting that through my investments. Is there a place I can go that wouldn't do that? But more than just the product, there are many companies today whose value system is very unbiblical. We can look around and we can say, this is a wonderful thing that they're actually doing, their product. But the company's values are very anti-biblical. And so as an investor, do we want to invest there, or would we be open to some type of biblical values investing? This is becoming much, I wouldn't call it prevalent, but there are more options today than I've seen probably in the last 10 or 15 years, where Christians, committed Christians who want to follow the biblical principle of investing, want to do it in a way that does not promote anti-biblical views, anti-biblical companies, does not support an agenda that's anti-biblical. So I would encourage you, if you're working with someone, to ask about the opportunity. And I wouldn't call, don't ask about environmentally social, unless that's what your goal is. I'm not gonna tell you what you have to do. But environmentally social does not necessarily focus on, in fact, many times it can be very different. Ask about biblical value investing, because it is out there. And what's interesting is the track record that we're seeing over the, most of these are maybe 3-4 years in existence. The track record in a number of them are really, really good. It's not like we're saying, well, I'm gonna get a poor return, but I know I'm doing the right thing. You're often getting a return that's equal to or perhaps even better than what the general market is doing. I wanna be careful. I'm not trying to promise. I don't wanna over-deliver. I'm not guaranteeing. I'm telling you that you look at it, but recognize that it may not be a situation where you have to give up your return significantly in order to follow God's plan.
Is that, I guess I heard from Faith and Finance on the radio, Invest Eventide, is that like a company
I think so. Invest Eventide, I've heard the name, I haven't had a chance to look, I'll look that up so we can get there. I know there's a particular fund company, if you guys are familiar with like Vanguard or Fidelity, we talked about that. There's another one now, it's called Inspire. And it started about 5 years ago, and the gentleman started with this idea, I just want to have investments available for people, mutual funds or EFTs, that are available for people who want to invest biblically. And so we've had several clients that have asked about it, and I am happy to use that. I think it's a great way to go. Another question in the back here.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't do a lot of investing, but my opinion or perception is, as an intelligent investor looking to get into stuff, is to not gamble, but to like partnership, getting back to values of the product and the quality of how the business is won, that you're actually creating a partnership, or perhaps a more socialistic term, a friendship. And so you're looking to partner, collaborate with what someone is doing and how they're doing it. And like friendships, you know, just because somebody makes a mistake or has a bad day, you don't terminate the relationship. You continue the friendship because your goals are similar and going to the same place. And so,
yeah, no. Again, for the purpose of those listening, and I know I keep saying that, the comment was that investing can be looked at more than just arbitrarily giving money to an organization. It should be more of a partnership or perhaps even a friendship, where you want to be working or investing with someone that has similar values and alignment, but you don't end a friendship just because someone makes one mistake, and that we give them the opportunity to recover. That's a principle that I would use in the investment philosophy no matter what. And that's a really sound philosophy. In fact, that's part of what my responsibility is. You know, we've got probably 50 or 60 different managers that we have as part of portfolios that we use for clients. And my job on a quarterly basis is to evaluate those managers. There's a lot of detailed information that's out there, and I'm on the phone talking and interviewing and reviewing stuff. And just because someone has a bad quarter doesn't mean that you get rid of them. Sometimes things happen. Sometimes they had a bad quarter because investors are illogical, and the fund has still made the right choices, but the market moved a different way because people really want unprofitable companies. That's the place to be for the quarter. So your point is well taken. We need to find organizations that we're investing in that we can have this type of partnership, and we don't rip the Band-Aid off just because someone makes one mistake. Having said that, we should be evaluating, and there times can happen when we realize that's not the right partnership going forward. You know, something has fundamentally changed and we need to now move on. So great, great point. So just keep in mind that biblical values exist. It's out there. I would encourage us as Christians, recognizing the time that we have here in history, that it's worth our attention to review this. And then as we're a couple minutes over, so I'm just gonna quickly summarize and we'll ask any last questions. Number one, invest, don't gamble. Do not gamble. God does not call us to be gamblers, but he does so often call us to invest, to be willing to pay a price today for a huge future benefit. The most familiar that we're with is paying the cost of being a disciple here on earth in order to have eternal life, the greatest reward we could ever have. Number two, harness the power of compounding. Someone once said that Einstein said that the greatest power on the face of the earth is the power of compounding. That's not true. He didn't say it. But I think what they say is true. The ability to grow. What's that? He should have said it. He should have said it. If he was a little smarter, he would have. All right. We'll leave it at that. Harness the value of diversification. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. But if you do diversify, do it intentionally. The fact, you know, I tell people the fact that you have two different S&P 500 mutual funds in your portfolio and that's it, that doesn't mean you're diversified. You've got two things that are exactly the same. So you need to appropriately diversify. And then the fourth here, don't panic at the worst times. Be willing to recognize that when everyone else is panicking, that's when you're paid not to panic. That's when you get your returns over time. And then the last one here, invest with your values. And when I say your values, what we're really talking about here are God's values. The heart of man is deceitful and wicked above all things. We cannot trust our heart. We need to trust God's heart. So, any final questions here today? By the way, anyone that needs to get to another meeting, feel free. I know there's more going on here than this, just this class today, so it doesn't bother me one bit. But if you guys have questions, I'm happy to stick around and I can answer them here as a group or individually afterwards.
So what is your company that you represent?
The question is, what company do I represent? Actually, can we do this? Let's have a quick word of prayer and then I'll let me answer some questions. And that way we're all here together for the prayer. Dear God, thank you again for the opportunity to learn. Lord, I pray that we would invest, number one, our hearts, our life, that we would recognize that there's a cost to be paid and that we are willing to give up anything here on this earth, that we would be with you for eternity. That is the reward that we seek. We also recognize that there are things here in this lifetime that you've called us to do. And we pray that you would give us the wisdom and the discernment. These are principles that we're talking about, but mostly we want to listen to your leading and guiding for each of our own lives, how you call us to put these principles into work and into the progress for your kingdom. We ask this in Jesus' holy name. Amen.
To listen to more of these presentations, you may visit the audio archives at MISDA.org/audio2023 or search for Michigan Conference Camp Meeting wherever you get your podcast.